Hello, everybody. It's Sam from Financial Samurai. And in this episode, I'm going to argue why the need for liquidity is overrated if you're a financially competent person who is willing to hustle. So in the debate between stocks versus real estate as a better investment, a common issue that comes up is real estate's lack of liquidity and therefore inferiority to stocks. One reader writes, "I prefer equities because real estate doesn't provide a sufficient illiquidity premium to merit the leveraged risk and transaction cost. If stocks provide a better return with better liquidity and bonds provide a similar yield with better liquidity and collateral, why take on the illiquidity at all?" So this is a really good point, especially since stocks outperform real estate over time. But as someone who believes it's best to invest in stocks and real estate for as long as possible, having an investment that can be easily sold could be a detriment to one's journey to financial freedom. Think about all the folks who sold out back in 2008 to 2012 during the financial crisis, right? They are just kicking themselves now because everything has surpassed the previous highs and then some, right? In 2012, I tried to sell my old rental house for $1.7 million. You know, at that time, the worst of the downturn was behind us, and I felt I had dodged a bullet. I bought the house for $1.525 million. So I figured, hey, I just recently engineered my layoff, so I don't have a steady paycheck anymore. The house is too big by two bedrooms, so it was better to downsize. And it didn't seem wise to continue to hold a $1.1 million mortgage when I didn't have a job. So why not just get that down payment out, maybe escape with $100,000 in profits, and just live a simple life? So I signed a 30-day exclusive listing contract with a real estate friend. I agreed to pay him 5% commission if he could sell it for over $1.7 million. He and his wife came over to stage the house. They spent some money decorating. We got a standard inspection done, and I pulled a 3R report for our disclosure statement. So that costs like $500. And my agent ended up hosting 3 open houses while we lived there and around 10 private showings. So that really disrupted our lifestyle because we always had to keep the house clean and do all that stuff. And at the end of the day, our best offer was a verbal offer, not even a written offer, right? A verbal offer with no concrete number. All the verbal offer said was, hey, we're willing to offer much less than asking. Is that okay? And I basically said, no, that's not okay. I told them to bugger off and I pulled the listing after 30 days. But if I could have pressed a button to sell the house for $1.7 million for, let's say, a reasonable $5,000 or $10,000 flat fee, I probably would have sold because, again, I didn't have a job. And I was like, I don't know if this is the right thing to do. Yes, I had a severance, but, you know, I don't know. This just doesn't seem right. But praise all that's good in the world, the real estate market was so illiquid and my real estate agent was not a good salesman that I saved myself from myself. And even though I'm sure I sold the property too early in 2017, I take solace in the fact that at least I got an extra $1 million just sitting on it 5 years later, thanks to it being illiquid. There is something to be said for owning something that's illiquid because owning for the long term is generally better than owning for the short term. Now, if you're a regular reader or listener of Financial Samurai, I think you're a competent person because all you've got to do is spend 1 hour to, let's say, 5 hours reading about the articles I've written on stuff that you care about, and boom, you are going to be with it. You're going to understand everything there is to know about that particular subject, or at least you're going to understand much more than the average person. So let me share 10 reasons why I think this liquidity, this need for liquidity, is overrated. So one, you have multiple types of insurance, whether it's health insurance, homeowners insurance, rental insurance, auto insurance, short-term disability, long-term disability, life insurance, and an umbrella policy, right? So all these insurance policies will protect you from a liquidity crunch. You might have to pay like a 10% copay or whatever. But that leads us to number two. You have a savings buffer. Everybody knows that it's important to save for an unknown future. Therefore, every financially competent person saves and invests as much as possible. I recommend saving around 5 to 10% of your net worth in low-risk assets such as certificates of deposits, well-rated municipal bonds, U.S. treasuries, and cash. And this way, you'll be able to survive long enough until the good times return. And the bad times generally don't last for much longer than 2 years, folks. So if you have 2 years worth of living expenses saved up, which I don't know many people do, but I think financially competent people can find a way to get that, whether it's through savings or some stocks, right? You'll be fine because doesn't last that long, the bad times. So 3, you're well diversified. I don't know any financially competent person or people who have 100% of their net worth in stocks or 100% of their net worth in real estate or any asset class for that matter. Everybody I know who cares about their finances is well diversified. So even if you tie up 80% of your net worth in your primary residence, like many Americans, you still have a 20% buffer to sell, let's say, your stocks or take out a home equity line of credit or tap your savings before you have to sell your house for nothing and live on the streets. 4, you're not too proud to hustle. The invention of companies like Upwork, Uber, Lyft, TaskRabbit, Thumbtack, Craigslist, Etsy, eBay, Amazon, and WordPress make it possible for anybody with enough drive to make extra side hustle money. Several years ago, when I was driving for Uber, I gave 500 rides that made me roughly about $30 an hour gross on average, but sometimes $100 an hour net due to driver signup income, right? So you can do a ton of things because everybody has their own skills that they're good at. You can assemble IKEA furniture, you can mow lawns, you can drive cars, you can do whatever it is. Or you might have enough gumption to start a website like Financial Samurai, and then who knows, it could be huge, but you will never know unless you try. 5, you've developed multiple streams of income, right? There are an endless number of investments that provide passive income to semi-passive income in case you lose your job or your business blows up. You know, I've listed in one of my posts private equity, real estate, CDs, fixed income, P2P lending, real estate crowdfunding, dividend investing, and creating your own products. And these are all ranked in order of worst to best. So I think real estate crowdfunding, dividend investing, and creating your own products is absolutely the best. So it took about 12 years after college for me to generate a livable passive income stream of about $80,000 in San Francisco. Yeah, $80,000 is pretty good elsewhere, but it's really not that great in San Francisco. But it was enough that I wouldn't have to starve. And then it took 17 years for the passive income to finally be enough to provide for a family of 3 in San Francisco, right? So it takes a long, long time. So that's why you need to have the foresight or the discipline to start saving and investing as soon as you start making a reasonable amount of money. Because at some point in your career, you're going to face some headwinds where you're going to get laid off or you're going to face workplace discrimination because you're over 40. But you know what? That's going to be fine. Let's say you get discriminated in the workplace at 41. Well, you've had 19 years to build passive income, so you're probably not going to face a liquidity crunch if you have that passive income. So 6, you negotiated a severance or received a severance. So even if you didn't have the foresight to start investing in passive income generating investments early on, you should at least be able to negotiate a severance. And if you didn't negotiate a severance, you should at least receive a severance if the company is following the law and they want their reputation and they want to treat you right. So standard severance packages range from 1 to 3 weeks per year you've worked, plus 2 to 3 months of base salary according to the WARN Act for employees at larger companies. And if you work at a company with deferred stock and cash compensation, as is common the case at, let's say, startups or just private companies or in banking, you know, a good severance negotiation will allow you to keep your unvested compensation. So in other words, you have the potential to earn 2 to 3 months of base pay thanks to the WARN Act, a lump sum severance payment, and deferred compensation to hold you over until recovery. Now, 7, you're also eligible for unemployment. And that's what's awesome about negotiating a severance or getting a severance and getting laid off. If you get laid off, you are eligible for unemployment benefits. Conversely, folks who get fired or quit their jobs, which is absolutely stupid, are not eligible for unemployment benefits because their thought process is you were a bad person, so you were fired for cause, so you don't deserve unemployment benefits, or you quit, which means you don't need the money. So screw off, we're going to give the money to people who were laid off. So in many states, you can get unemployment benefits for 26 weeks. And if things get really, really bad, there might be a federal extension, like during the economic crisis, where Obama extended the unemployment benefits to 99 weeks. So in California, your maximum unemployment pay is currently $450 a week, which is not bad. I mean, surely that can pay for enough food for you to survive, maybe some transportation expenses when you're out job hunting and so forth. And also the unemployment office will help you with career training and assistance. It's not that much help, but it's better than nothing. 8, you can slash costs and downsize. Right? No rational person is going to like just sit there and do nothing if they're facing a liquidity crunch. They're going to cut down on all extraneous costs and subsist on nothing but water and ramen noodles if that's what it takes. If you own a home, maybe you can rent out the entire home and downsize to a studio. Or if you own a home, you can rent out rooms. I had 3 rooms, actually, that I could have rented out for maybe $1,000 a month. I don't know, maybe more, actually, in San Francisco if I really, really needed the money. Whatever the case, it's all relative to where you live. You can do things to reduce your expenditure. 9, you've got a vast support network, right? Let's say worst comes to worst and you've completely run out of money. Since you've been a good person for all these years and have never asked anybody for anything, you've been focused on helping other people first, people will line up. They're going to line up to help you, right? Maybe they'll give you an interest-free loan or make an introduction at a company they work for, or maybe they'll just throw you some freelance work on the side because freelancing is so commonplace now. People absolutely love to help those they like, especially those that have brought them some type of joy into their lives. And then 10, and finally, you're not too proud to live back home with your parents. If for some reason you were a complete ass all these years, you didn't treat anybody with kindness and respect, surely your parents will unconditionally take you into their home and provide for you and your family until you can get back up on your feet, right? The stigma of living with your parents as an adult child has subsided. Yes, there is still a stigma, but you know what? If you're down on your luck, nobody's going to blame you or say, you know, what a loser you are. Hey, that's what family is for. You know, as a father now, if my son was just struggling, you bet I'd gladly accept him back so he can at least save on rent and build back up his savings and find a job and do that. And I think this would be a great time actually to reconnect, because I'm assuming after college, most kids just become independent and then just lose touch with their parents. So that's it, folks. I just gave you guys 10 reasons why in a financial crunch, you'll probably be fine and that liquidity is overrated. And I realize it's easier to say liquidity is overrated during good times, although things are looking a little dicey in 2018 and beyond with interest rates going up and year-over-year comparisons getting harder and harder to beat. We know that no matter how much we plan for the future, bad things are going to happen all the time. You know, I thought I was rock steady until I got obliterated in 2008 and 2009, hence the start of this site. So if you feel you can't afford to get your finances together in time, then the number one thing you must do is start treating people right ASAP. I'm talking about getting involved in your community through volunteer work or through organizations whose mission it is to help the less fortunate. I'm talking about becoming a mentor to people. I'm talking about asking your bosses or colleagues whether there's anything you can do to help without expecting anything in return. And also reconnecting or connecting with people before you need to connect with them. Always at the beginning of every single year, there's a whole influx of people who try to connect with others over LinkedIn. It just seems so phony and fake. And then a lot of people try to connect with people when they have lost their jobs, and that is also too late. You need to build these relationships now before you really need anything. I personally will gladly help anybody who was kind to me in the past. You know, my closest friends will never starve because I'll never let them starve. You know, we've built a support network where if one of us stumbles, we will all do our part to lift that person up. And that's what being a part of a community is. And I hope one of you millions of readers and listeners who visited Financial Samurai since 2009 will lend a helping hand if I stumble. And I think that's just simply the way the world works. You try to do good and help without expecting anything in return, because one day, who knows, you might need some help as well. Hopefully, after listening to this podcast, everybody is motivated to build financial buffers for their financial buffers. Never take your life for granted. Never expect the future to be wonderful and bright. You know, hope for the best, but expect the worst. It's kind of the normal, rational mantra that you should think about as you go through life. So I'd love to know from all of you whether you think the need for liquidity is overrated, and what are some of the things you will do before being forced to sell your primary home or valuable investment. I'd love to know if there was a situation where you faced a liquidity crunch and were forced to sell something you didn't really want to. We've all been there, and I hope none of us ever go back there again. Thanks so much.